The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
This is the Pro America Report on The Answer San Diego.
Welcome, welcome, welcome. Ed Martin here on the Pro America Report. Great to be together, and I hope you had a great weekend. Busy, busy time. Lots happening for lots of families. School winding down for some. I was over with my daughter and my wife and our whole family for a college weekend this past weekend, which was great. My oldest daughter is a freshman in college, so we had a great time. And a lot happening across the country and the world, and lots to comment on. I when I get to my wink every day, I think to myself, what's the most important story that's not being covered in what I would say is a sane way? And I have to say, I changed my mind since I started to get ready for this wink. What you need to know, first of all, if you go to proamericareport.com, you'll see Ed Martin's Pro America Report. There you can sign up for the daily email, the wink, what you need to know. And that's what we start today. But here's the thing. When I thought about, I thought, well, there's the leak, the leaker who it looks like he leaked some documents that show the Ukraine-Russian war is in a different place than maybe we thought. There's conversations about the school choice movement, vouchers, a very ugly smear. I might get to that later in the show. Smear against Chris Rufo. Sorry, Corey D'Angelo, not Chris Rufo. Corey D'Angelo is the one who got smeared. A terrible, mean-spirited, almost political ad. I have to say, I guess the creator of the ad, which really smeared Corey D'Angelo, I guess they're considering him a public figure so thoroughly that they think they're protected, but it was really brutal. But I could talk about all those things. I could talk about Tesla. It looked like they were going to have a launch to go to Mars, or the next step in that for Elon Musk. But that got scrapped early in the day on Monday, I think. We'll see. But instead, I want to talk about the violence that was featured over the weekend in Chicago. And when I say it was featured, most of our major cities have violence and crime every weekend. If you go and do a tally of the number of people shot, for example, in a place like Chicago over a weekend, it's devastating numbers. Sometimes it's more than 50 people shot on a two-day period. But and right now our cities are lawless and or our cities are wild. Let's say that way. Lawless is a little bit of an overstatement, but it's not a surprise. It's not a surprise. And why I'm covering this as my wink today, what you need to know, is because I did a radio interview earlier today, and the guy on the other end, he's kind of a libertarian, and he said, well, Ed, you know, New York City, people say that there's not enough enforcement of the laws, you know, and that the current prosecutor is a Soros guy and spending his resources on trying to trump up charges against the former president. He said, this guy said, but Ed, the jails are full. The jails are full. What are you going to do? And I said, well, if you want to change the laws so there's less people in jail, go ahead and change the laws. If you want the executive branch to do a pardon, go ahead and do a pardon. But if you're going to have a system of laws and you send out the word, the bat signal goes out from Gotham or any other city, that when it comes to so-called, you know, basic crimes, property crime, sometimes called, we're not going to enforce them. Or in addition, in a lot of these cities, they're not going to enforce any of the drug laws. So if you burn a car in Washington, D.C. at Trump's inauguration, you won't get prosecuted. If you break a window in Chicago over this past weekend, you won't get prosecuted. In fact, you'll get the mayor to say something like, well, we sure wish there was constructive ways where these young people could go somewhere and be supervised by adults. What? These people don't want to be supervised by adults. And my point is not that the mob of kids were hardened criminals, but you don't have to go far to see that the bat signal being out creates a situation where you can't really tell the difference. Remember a few months ago when there was an epidemic of people they call it smash and grab. They go into malls in California, especially, and a gang of people would have a bunch of masks on, and they'd break open the cases and they'd grab the jewelry or the watches or other stuff. And it wasn't always the highest end. It wasn't like they would do it at Tiffany's. Tiffany's has an armed guard at the front and has bars on the door. They would go to the mid-level places, the mid-level department stores and in the malls. But they knew they wouldn't be prosecuted. They knew that there would be no consequences. Again, once you set up a system where the cost of bad behavior is low or nothing, don't be surprised when people take advantage of that. So in Chicago and in New York and in D.C. and in my hometown, St. Louis, the prosecutors have announced that they will not prosecute so-called property crimes, that they will not prosecute drug crimes, drug violations. And once you do that, you can expect that those things will, people that want to commit those crimes, people that want to commit that mischief, will come to that town. That's inevitable. And what it's doing is, over time, it's making inevitable that you cannot go to the cities. Because if you go to the cities because you like, to see the skyline in Chicago on the lake there, and it's, you know, you like to go to the Navy Pier, and you can see the Ferris wheel and there's music and all, that's fine. Because why? Because the thing that you want, the incentive for you to be there, is the skyline and the Navy Pier. But if the things you want to do are lawlessness, you have all the incentive you can want to go to downtown Chicago. And so you will. And pretty quickly, absent a change in the enforcement of the law, the people who want to see the skyline and the Navy Pier are not going to come down in the face of crime and lawlessness and having their car broken into or having to worry about a group of people, you know, raving across an area. Back in the 80s, they called it wilding. It was a whole movement. Now, my point there, by the way, is that these things do ebb and flow. When you get a series of law enforcement officials and mayors and others that don't enforce the law, you get a bad situation. And the classic example is New York City in the 1970s and 80s, when it got increasingly lawless, increasingly graffiti covered, and you ended up with vigilantes like Bernie Getz pulling a gun out on the subway and shooting somebody, and you had people getting more and more fed up and fleeing from New York City until there was a dramatic change in leadership. And actually, I was just watching a documentary about this called Gotham. I'm going to try to get the speaker on. And Gotham actually gave the credit. He said it started to happen actually under Koch. It started to happen under Dinkins. Dinkins actually hired Mayor Koch was the mayor of New York City, and it continued downhill. Then Mayor Dinkins, African-American, was upset Koch in the primary and became the mayor. And Dinkins was boxed in by the crime and forced against his political will by the speaker of the city council to hire a bunch of cops. And they actually added a whole bunch, tens of thousands of cops, but it didn't happen in time for Dinkins to get credit. In this documentary, they cover that. So what happens? Rudy wins. And then after Rudy's 8 years or 9 years because of the situation with the 9/11, then Rudy hands it off to Bloomberg, who goes another, was it 10 or 12 years? I guess 12 years. He actually got term limits rolled because of the crisis. And so what you end up with is people who are seeing that the incentive changed, and that the reality is that the crime can be stopped if there's law enforcement and prosecutors are willing to do it. And that's what happened there. So what you need to know is the cities are not giving us examples of kids being worse. They're not an example of the jails being full. They're not an example of social media run wild. They're not an example of any of those things. They are a clear result of going ahead and not enforcing the law and holding people accountability for crimes that have an impact broadly on how you live. And that was, by the way, again, back to this documentary called Gotham. That's what you saw in New York. They called it broken windows. I think it was broken windows. They would basically say anywhere where you saw graffiti or broken windows, you fix it because people have a better sense of what's happening. They have a better understanding of law and order when they see it all around them. So that's what you need to know today. What it's not just defund the police. It's not just defund the police. It's send up the bat signal that you want lack of accountability and violence and crime, and people will deliver for it. So that's what you need to know. We will take a break and we'll be right back. It's Ed Martin here on the Pro America Report. Back in a moment. Welcome back. Welcome back. Ed Martin here on a Pro America Report. My friend Michael Volpe, the investigative journalist and friend of the program, a frequent guest and someone who has often has some really helpful ideas, thinking things that I'm not seeing, sent me an email earlier today. He said, hey, I'm not sure you saw this story. We ought to talk about it. If you go over to his Substack, michaelvolpe.substack.com, Michael Volpe, V-O-L-P-E. The title is Michael Volpe Investigates. And so, Michael, you sent me this. I don't even understand, actually, the timing of this. So walk us through. The idea is that there's a medical doctor who refused to require masks. But years ago, I think. Anyway, tell me what's going on here. Tell me where it is. It's not exactly in California. Not exactly in New York State. Tell me about it. Go ahead, please.
Yeah. So the doctor's name is Eric Hensa. He practices out of Texas, ear, throat, and nose specialist. Right. And so if you remember, I think it was the summer of 2020, Governor Greg Abbott did put a mandate or an executive order together that required all businesses to require that everyone wear a mask. And Dr. Henson didn't believe this was right. So he, at his practice, put a sign up and obviously also this was the order, if you will, in the practice that you're not required to wear a mask. And then he said, if you feel that's a problem, call and cancel the appointment and you can either redo the appointment or we'll recommend someone else. Mm-hmm. So that executive order was rescinded at somewhere between 3 and 6 months later. Don't quote me on the exact timing. Mm-hmm. But because it was in effect and Dr. Henson was violating Governor Abbott's order for a few months, the Texas Medical Board went after him, went after his license.
Right.
And so towards the end of 2021, so I think it was about 18 months later, they gave him what I term a slap on the wrist. So a $1,000 fine, like some continuing education classes. He calls it jurisprudence, and I should know exactly what that means, but I think it's retaking a test. Now, he refused to do it. I asked, seems like if you had just paid the fine and these seem minimal, he said, well, I felt that the punishment was wrong and I wasn't going to accept the wrong punishment. And so because he had failed to do that, the Texas Medical Board continued to go after him. And their most recent punishment, which was at the beginning of April of this year, he was suspended for a couple of days. He has to do some more classes, other things. But the main thing is he's put on the central database all around the country as a troublemaker doctor. And he's already lost privileges at one hospital. Huh. One insurance company dropped him because they have a rule that if you're suspended for any period of time, we immediately drop you. So his practice is certainly threatened. And this is not the only doctor who challenged the establishment on COVID in Texas, who the Texas Medical Board has gone after. And I started being an investigative journalist in 2007. And one of the first things I investigated was medical boards, in particular the Texas Medical Board, which is a long and documented history of corruption. But the second doctor who the Texas Medical Board went after was Dr. Mary Bowden, and she prescribed ivermectin And she also, by the way, is ear, throat, and nose specialist. And then she lost privileges at her hospital, and the Texas Medical Board went after her for providing misinformation, I think is the way they termed it. And she has a similar story. They also gave her a slap on the wrist. It was slightly more significant. I think her fine was $5,000, but again, the jurisprudence, the continuing education, and because she refused, they went after her even harder. And so her case is still ongoing. There's a lot that's been written about with her. So if you want to find out more, but it seems like the Texas Medical Board is going after doctors who challenged the establishment on COVID.
We're talking to Michael Volpe. Michael, pulling back for 1 second on this story, Dr. Henson, he's not a fly by night doctor. Oh, yeah. I don't see it in your story, but I think I know that he's, you know, he's got normal to above average credentials. I mean, he's so, right. And his professional assessment at the time, when everybody was guessing, when Fauci, mm-hmm. for example, admitted that he was lying about masks, mm-hmm. he was, you know, right. he said he lied because he didn't want to run on the N95 masks. So he was mm-hmm. lying about it. My point here is that, you know, people were guessing what worked. And by the time it was done, and you know, ear, nose, throat, ear, nose and throat doctor, you think he's got a pretty good right to guess. That's what he does. I mean, he's doing, you know, what is, so they guess in this case. And then according to the establishment, they'd guessed wrong. But you know, by a certain point, I don't know when that would be, a year ago, 2 years ago, whenever it would be, I think most people would say, okay, nobody really knew what they were doing in that setting. And yet they're still enforcing this against him. Is this because, is what you said in the middle of this? Is that because he sort of didn't take his medicine, you know, to coin a phrase, or they could have dropped it, I suppose, and said, okay, well, we were all guessing at that point. What's your sense of why they didn't? I mean, what is it, just sort of woke medical boards?
The Texas Medical Board definitely has a long history of corruption that I covered many years ago. Mm-hmm. But look, number one, they did give him a slap on the wrist that he refused to follow through on that would have ended this. But I guess the simplest way to describe it is there was an executive order and he refused to abide by the executive order. And the Texas Medical Board saw that as a violation of their rules, and they are determined to mete out punishment for the violation of their rules, regardless of what we now, looking back, think of those rules. He violated their rules as they see them. Now, there was no specific rule that said you have to have masks at your practice, but they said, since the governor demanded it and you refused it, it violates our code. With Dr. Bowden, it's, you know, it's even more complex. They're essentially, you didn't go along with the Fauci, the vax is right, everything else is wrong narrative, and so we're going to punish you. But on top of it, by not doing and it was a slap on the wrist originally. By not doing that, you know, he did escalate it. I interviewed him for about 20 minutes. You can listen to the interview. He'll tell you why he escalated it, but he did escalate. There was an opportunity for both Dr. Bowden and Dr. Henson to resolve this with fairly small amount of punishment. And they chose to amp it up. And, you know, I've dealt with bureaucracies a lot. Bureaucracies don't like it when you challenge them. So yeah, here we are.
And Michael, again, we're talking with Michael Volpe. And again, if Michael Volpe investigates, is his Substack over michaelvolpe.substack.com. And a lot of, as he's, you know, he's investigative journalist is how he describes himself. And you look in here, Michael, one common aspect of your journalism is that you find these places and stories where, you know, government seems to be, as you say, either corrupt or proceeding with its power in a way that doesn't really make sense for its ends. I mean, it's, you know, sometimes I don't know if it's, you know, small C corruption, meaning they're just drunk with power, or if there's actually somebody influencing, you know, some of the cases and things we've talked about where the family courts, there's so much money moving in and out of those places. It feels like it's capital C corruption with money moving. In this case, I don't know. It looks a lot more like control. What's the future of this? Does Dr. Henson have a way that he gets a challenge on the merits? It feels like he's sort of stuck in the procedural fight. And maybe the effort, against, the other doctor, sorry, her name fails me, is
Mary Bowden,
that's already sort of moved along too. I mean, have we missed the chance to have these fights on the actual sort of facts of the medicine?
Right. There's ways to challenge the ruling, and he's got an attorney. His name is Paul Davis. So he can challenge it. You know, I'm not going to read the tea leaves and how easy or hard that challenge will be.
Right.
He's hoping that this story reaches the governor and the governor takes action. I'm not sure if the governor can. The governor of Texas appoints the members of the Texas Medical Board. So it's his people. I don't know how many of them were appointed while Abbott's been the governor, but he does have a direct relationship to the Texas Medical Board. There are things that Dr. Henson can do. It seems to me that this is a doctor who challenged the establishment, but then on top of it, refused to accept the punishment and say, you're right, I did these things wrong. Here's the $1,000. I'll retake the test, do some continuing education. And Dr. Bowden could have done the exact same thing. And she would have, finished up her things with the Texas Medical Board as well. And I do want to say again that the initial punishment was what I consider a slap on the wrist. So it isn't that they initially went overboard with their punishment, but neither doctor would accept the punishment.
Right.
And, you know,
well, and
the audience can say whether it's right or wrong.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you and I both know a lot of doctors. I'm married to one, and mm-hmm. they believe what they're going to believe. They've spent a lot of their career figuring things out, and they say, hey, wait a second, don't tell me, you know, the sky is green when I know it's blue. And in this case, again, backing up Michael Volpe for one second again, mm-hmm. you wrote a lot during the COVID, and you saw a lot of the government interaction and all. It doesn't look like that the science, follow the science crowd learned much. I mean, even in Texas, it looks mm-hmm. like a lot of, maybe it's Texas, a lot of ego on all sides.
It is. And, you know, one interesting thing is that when Abbott reversed his executive order, he also ordered any punishments as a result of the initial order need to go away, because they were part of the reason he rescinded it, at least at the time he did, was because they were going after the lady who had a hair salon who opened it when they weren't supposed to. And so he was saying anyone who was punished during the executive order, that punishment also goes away. So you would think it would apply to the Texas Medical Board as well, but it hasn't. It might be ego that you, number one, refused to abide by the mandate. And Dr. Henson explains why he didn't. But then on top of it, we gave you this. I'm sure in the TMB's mind, it's a reasonable punishment. And rather than doing it, you flaunted the punishment. And so we're going to go after you even more.
Yeah, it's an interesting one. Michael Volpe, again, michaelvolpe.substack.com. Michael, thank you for the time and for digging into these stories and bringing them to my attention. Very helpful. We will put up on social media a link to his site and make sure that we get some more there. So thanks, Michael. Michael Volpe, everybody. We will take a break and we'll be right back. It's Ed Martin here on the Pro America Report. Back in a moment. Welcome back. Welcome back. It's Ed Martin here on a Pro America Report. Our next guest, I've been looking forward to this. As my listeners know, sir, our next guest is a professor, professor of politics at George Fox University. His name is Mark David Hall. He's also on the faculty, I guess, as an associate faculty over at Emory University, Baylor University also. And his new book, which is what I love. My listeners know I love books, and I love that I get them sent to me and I can read through them. It is from Fidelis Books, which is an imprint of our friends at Post Hill Press, and the book is called Proclaim Liberty Throughout All the Land: How Christianity Has Advanced Freedom and Equality for All Americans. So first of all, Professor Mark David Hall, welcome to the program. How are you?
I'm doing very well. Thanks so much for having me.
It seems a little bit out of fashion to be as clear as you are in this book about Christianity being a positive. And I'm not teasing at all. Right now, Christianity is in that period. I think it does ebb and flow a bit in the popular press and all, but it's kind of viewed negatively. It's exploitative. It's been used by too many people to take advantage of people. I guess, you're a professor of politics as well as I'm sure history. Are we in this? Is it an ebb and flow? Are we in a particularly challenging time? It feels like it.
Yeah, I think it's been a pretty steep downhill ride since the mid 20th century, when I think it's fair to say that fairly secular progressives took over the academy. And so when they write histories, when they write about politics, they tend to assume that Christianity is a repressive force. It's a bad thing. It's something that needs to be overcome. And things have only taken off in the 21st century, right? The 1619 Project, maybe most obvious. Wanting to understand all of America, American history through the lens of slavery and racism, that sort of thing. So this book is aimed at pushing back against all that. And I argue a strong thesis that Christianity has been a force for good, especially with respect to freedom and equality in America.
Again, our guest right now is Mark David Hall. He's the Herbert Hoover Distinguished Professor of Politics over at George Fox University. And when I look at your text, and this book is Proclaim Liberty Throughout All the Land, when I look at this, you make a point that Christians were at the forefront of what the term I use is making a more perfect union. In other words, we started out in our Constitution, we acknowledged we've got to make a more perfect union. It was imperfect. And that to me, that was a very Christian admission. But, you point out it was Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. It was Reverend Ralph Abernathy. It was Reverend Andrew Young. They were explicitly motivated by their faith, and it was a Christian movement. That wasn't 100 years ago. That was, 40 years ago. And yet, now, the movements that assert equality and assert more rights are not even remotely. They don't even it's not even the Reverend. I don't think Reverend Al Sharpton even pretends anymore.
No, I think that's right. And as you know, from my book, I begin with the Pilgrims and Puritans and argue that folks who are attempting to create a city on a hill. I've argued in my last book, Did America Have a Christian Founding?, that our founders were profoundly influenced by Christianity when they created our experiment in constitutional self-governance. We have the abolitionists. We have the, in the 20th century, I focused mainly on the advance of religious liberty for all Americans. But you're exactly right. I could have easily had an entire chapter on the civil rights movement, and all of the leaders of the civil rights movement were minister of the gospels. And of course, you have both African-American and white ministers. It wasn't just simply an African-American movement. And thank goodness for it.
Right. Our guest, Mark David Hall, Professor Hall, is over at George Fox University. Does a book like this, does it in academic circles? Because when I read this, it's not really, you're a professor of politics, I guess, but to me, it's a lot of history. It's a lot of analytical, kind of analysis of how things fit into history. It doesn't seem like it's an argument. It seems like a description of what's gone on. But it doesn't feel like that's how academia reacts to this, right? Again, have we lost that much ground that fast?
Yeah, so I've done a dozen academic books with Oxford University Press, Cambridge University Press. This book and my last one are explicitly aimed at the general reading public. And so I try to be very clear, very accessible. There is an argument involved, right? I'm explicitly pushing back against the 1619 Project, but I would like to think it's completely grounded in historical facts. So I think the most progressive, angry atheist can read my book and would have a hard time arguing with it.
I think that's right. And I think a lot of it is sort of self-evident. Back for a second to the text itself. In one of the chapters, I'm sorry, I'm trying to find my notes. Yes, there it is. You talk about the evangelical reformers. Lots of people wish for another a revival, right? Not just wish, but pray for a revival and pray for, you know, that there would be a period in our there are periods in our history that we describe as these periods of awakening and people, you know, returning to the study of scripture and to an idea that of being governed by an external truth that was from God. How could that happen in the modern moment? I mean, you know, again, you're a professor, so you're exposed to young people, especially, and the technology and how fast it's moved. It's hard to see. I guess maybe someone around the time that Gutenberg was doing the printing press was acting like me, saying, I don't know how this will turn out. It's really going to be a problem, but it does feel like it's a problem right now.
Well, I agree. We need revival. And as you point out, in antebellum America, that is 1820s, 1830s, that's the time of the Second Great Awakening, where there were revivals all over America. People were coming to Christ. People were being convicted and repenting of their sins. And there's a profound missions movement that went along with that, but also a profound movement to reform society, to fix the evils of society. Opposition to slavery is one of the most obvious of these movements. One I discuss in my book that I think is not all that well known is the opposition to the Indian removal from Georgia. You had the five so-called civilized tribes, the Cherokees and others. And Andrew Jackson wanted to move them to Oklahoma. And you had petition after petition signed by evangelicals and all sorts of political activism aimed at protecting these Native Americans, guaranteeing them the land they had by treaty rights. And you just can't explain things like this in terms of self-interest. I think it was people motivated by the gospel. And so I think our prayer for today has to be for revival. And of course, nothing could stop the God and the Holy Spirit. If God wants there to be revival, there will be revival.
Well, that's exactly right. I mean, all the stumbling blocks that you and I can think of are going to be, you know, they're nothing to God, but it's easy to shake your head or your fist at it. The chapter on, again, our guest is Mark David Hall, the professor over at, George Fox University, Herbert Hoover, distinguished professor there. The chapter in the book, Must Religion Be Stripped from the Public Square? And this to me, you know, and I'm a lawyer, so you know, and I care a lot about these issues. This to me is the chapter that caught my eye in terms of what I feel is happening. In other words, starting in, I think you started out with 1947 or so. Is it Everson? Yeah. And then coming forward, it's a sort of activist effort, not just in the courts, although it's the courts heavily, but in the culture to drive out of the public square, meaning in my mind, the public schools first, but then just in general, drive out the Christian ethos. And once you do that, you take care of, you eliminate the education. And you know, I joke with people that to me, the Pledge of Allegiance is brainwashing. It's just brainwashing in the right direction. When I make my kids say prayers, rote prayers, I don't know if they're having deep theological moments, but I know that they're directionally, they're going to be feeling and seeing and day to day and time go like, just like going to church. And they're going to, you know, go to church multiple times a week. They're going to have that as a habit in their life. As long as I can control it, we lost that as we drove out of the public square, especially public schools, faith and Christianity. I don't know how you ever get back the basics of America without somehow more widely spreading that formation.
Well, let me just affirm that. I am a huge supporter of Christian schools. I don't know why any parent want to have their children in Christian schools if they can at all manage it. You're exactly right with 1947, of course. That's when the U.S. Supreme Court applied the Establishment Clause to the state. The Establishment Clause simply says Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion. In other words, we aren't going to have a national church. And by the doctrine of incorporation, now we aren't going to have a state church either. But that does not mean we have to strip religion from the public square. It does not mean there's a wall of separation between church and state. So groups like Freedom from Religion Foundation, American Humanist Society, they want to remove like the Blandensburg Cross, right? This 1925 World War One era cross memorializing young men who died in the First World War. And it's on public land now. And so, of course, the American Humanist Association says this has to come down. When Ohio built a Holocaust memorial, it wanted to include the Star of David in the Holocaust memorial. And of course, the Freedom from Religion Foundation people said, no, no, you can't do that. There's a wall of separation between church and state. Well, fortunately, the federal courts have come around to, I think, a sensible understanding of the Establishment Clause. And so the Blandensburg Cross was found to be constitutional by a vote of 7-2. Ohio ignored the Freedom from Religion Foundation. We're seeing public funds going to private religious schools on the same terms as other private schools. It's, I think, we're actually sitting in a pretty good place right now with respect to the federal judiciary and the Establishment Clause.
Well, I hope so. And I think the one thing that I would say is that when you watch like the 1619 Project, and as you say, you're explicitly kind of countering that by saying, oh, here's the history. What you do find, though, is that people, I get disconcerted at the number of people that don't realize they're being fed a line, you know, and that suddenly, you know, the 1619, because it was in the New York Times, is somehow credible when a lot of it seems not only incredible, but lacking in credibility. I have to leave it there. Mark David Hall, he's the Herbert Hoover Distinguished Professor of Politics at George Fox University. His book is Proclaim Liberty Throughout the Land, How Christianity Has Advanced Freedom and Equality for All Americans. Fidelis Books of Post Hill Press has this one out. Thanks for your time, sir, and we'll have you back again.
Hey, thanks very much. It's been my pleasure.
Thank you. We appreciate it. And I will put up on social media links to all of both the website as well as, Sophia Institute Press, and a link to where you can get the book, which is everywhere. It's really helpful. I enjoyed this one a lot. We'll take a break, everybody. We'll be right back. It's Ed Martin here on the Pro America Report. Back in a moment.
This is the Phyllis Schlafly Report, a daily commentary continuing the conservative pro-family legacy of Phyllis Schlafly. Now, the president of Phyllis Schlafly Eagles, Ed Martin.
Happy Tax Day to my fellow American taxpayers. To celebrate, I've turned to Senator Rand Paul's annual Festivus Report to share with you just a few examples of how your tax dollars are stewarded by our elected officials. Just last year, the federal government awarded a grant of $187,500 to Kent State University to conduct a study verifying that the bond between a child and their pet is beneficial. This 3-year study will finally put to rest the question of whether children would be better off without man's best friend, a question being asked by exactly no one. The grant does not specify what researchers propose that we do if it turns out having pets is bad for mental health. I guess we'll have to give them more taxpayer dollars if we want an answer to that question. Another line item in our national budget includes spending $200,000 to educate Americans about train tracks. Imagine you're approaching railroad tracks and you observe the railroad crossing sign with the flashing lights, the bells, the train whistle, and that crossbar coming down over the road. What's your first reaction? If you answered, keep driving, then fear no more. The federal government is spending $200,000 this year to educate you that those lights and crossbar mean to stop at railroad crossings. Since 1996, the federal government has given more than $3 million to Northeastern University to fund research into how to overcome steroid abuse. That doesn't sound like the worst use of taxpayer funds, does it? Well, Northeastern's method for studying the problem is to inject hamsters with steroids and watch them fight one another. They then inject the rodents with other drugs to see if they can override the effects of steroids. And maybe this will work on humans too. But rather than trying to counteract the drugs by giving people more drugs, why not just get them to stop taking drugs in the first place? Maybe I should get a research grant to find that out. While I may have been a bit more lighthearted than usual today, know that government waste is a very serious problem. The American people deserve accountability for their tax dollars, and we should demand more oversight.
This has been the Phyllis Schlafly Report from Phyllis Schlafly Eagles. Liberal politicians cannot be allowed to manipulate tax laws regarding Social Security, charitable donations, retirement accounts, homeownership, and the definition of family. Low taxes and smaller government are core values at PhyllisSchlafly.com. Join us, won't you, at PhyllisSchlafly.com. And thanks for listening to the Phyllis Schlafly Report.
Welcome back. Welcome back. Ed Martin here on the Pro America Report. Hey, I went too long on those interviews, so I'm a little long. I only got about 50 seconds. So let me just say thank you, as always, to the great Noah Dingley, our producer, who does a great job, and also Ryan Hyder, associate producer. Those guys helped me keep this thing together. Thank you for listening. Don't forget, visit ProAmericaReport.com, ProAmericaReport.com, ProAmericaReport.com. Sign up there for the Daily Wink and also all the rest of what we're up to. At PhyllisSchlafly.com. So we will be back tomorrow. Thank you again for listening. It's Ed Martin here on the Pro America Report. Talk to you tomorrow.
This is the Pro America Report on The Answer San Diego.
3-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.